Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code BREADBOX at checkout for 20% off at catholicsingles.com.
Listen. Welcome to the Shoot the Shiitake podcast with me, Father Leo, a Catholic priest on a mission to bring people of all different backgrounds together to learn, to love, and to accept one another. Even if we disagree, we've got to be willing to listen to each other as God does with us and as God intends for us to do with each other. This podcast and this show isn't about talking about the deep theological things about our Catholic faith, but rather making it real and practical in our life simply by listening to each other. And this week, we have a chance to do part two on our discussion of freedom with Father Roger Landry. He's a priest of the Diocese of Fall River in Massachusetts, writes regularly for the National Catholic Register, for The Anchor and for The Pilot and other publications. He is an on-site commentator for the EWTN papal coverage for the 2013 conclave that elected Pope Francis, and he appears on various Catholic programs. He's the author of the 2018 book, Plan of Life, Habits to Help You Grow Closer to God, and he speaks widely on controversial issues in matters of faith and in the public life. And on top of that, he's also a really good friend. And if you want to support our efforts and our shows, simply go to my website, platinggrace.com, click on the Academy where you can become a member and support us by joining one of the tiers. Once an Academy member, you're going to become part of a unique online community and gain access to premium content and other special perks. But for now, please join me and my guest, Father Roger Landry, as we talk about freedom and dive into a deep dish discussion here on Shoot the Shiitake. And welcome back to part two of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Roger Landry. In part one, we talked about kind of a theology, a better logic to understand freedom. But let's be honest with you, things have to become real for us. And so, Father Roger Landry, I love the fact that you seem like a pretty free person. You know, like knowing you, you speak your mind without fear. Is that part of what it means to be free? And is there a time when you actually feel like, I got to hold back, I'm not free to say what I really want? In other words, we really struggle with how to make freedom real. What are some of your thoughts?
Beautiful question. Freedom involves the virtues. And so with regard to speaking one's mind, there are two virtues at least that are involved there. One is courage, the capacity to speak what you think is the truth out of season, because you think others really need to hear it. It's not just a spout off. And so if we were enslaved by fear, we wouldn't be free.
So can you, an example of that, would that be Twitter?
I mean, the way people sometimes it could be Twitter. I just want to tie the courage into the other virtue.
Please do.
And then we can have a conversation about it. The other is what we would call discretion or self-mastery. That there are times in which the most charitable thing to do, the most responsible thing to do, is not to share our opinion, not to spout off. In tying those two together, courage on the one side, discretion, would be prudence, which isn't pusillanimity or this small-mindedness in which one is too timid to do something, but it's really, is this appropriate for the end that I'm really seeking, which in most cases generally is going to be helping other people. Is it really going to help or is it going to hurt? So you've got those two things. So sometimes it's going to be very free to speak your mind. Other times you're going to be most free when you're able to bite your tongue. Because if you were just, if you couldn't keep it in and you just felt compelled to share it no matter what, you're not free there either.
Interesting. I mean, first of all, you're using really big words like pusillanimity.
Well, I just had to throw it in there. It's one of those words.
But here's the point. The reason why I brought it up is because a lot of people need a lot more stuff, a lot more internal tools,
you're using the word virtues before they can even exercise freedom. A lot of times people think that you begin with freedom, but clearly it doesn't begin with, where does freedom fall in, you know, like in the whole thing of like virtues? Because it sounded to me like you needed a lot more things, like a self-mastery, you needed courage, you need charity before you can even understand and practice freedom.
So we need to be formed in freedom. Babies aren't born fully free. I mean, they can't feed themselves, they can't do any, I mean, they're totally dependent on others. But over the course of time, they're formed. And the more they're formed in virtues, and what's a virtue? It's a moral muscle. It's a really good spiritual habit that allows you to do what you need to do, what the good is, what the true is, more easily. Doesn't mean it's easy necessarily to do something totally courageous, but it is easier when we're no longer caving into, for example, some of our fears or some of our instincts and bad habits. So there's formation in freedom, and you see it in the way that we raise kids in almost any area. Once well, a kid learned...
Let's get there, because a lot of parents are very afraid to give their children freedom. And so they act very strict, and they literally raise the minister's daughter syndrome, you know, where once they're 18 years old, they're going to go out because I'm free of all my parents' rules. What kind of helpful, practical tips for families who want to instill a true sense of freedom to their child? What does that even look like?
So one of the most important habits for parents is to eventually explain why parents are asking them to do something or not do something. Sometimes parents can be a little bit autocratic. Because I said so is the answer to questions about why and why not. Now, when we look at the Old Testament and the New Testament, we see that God, as a teacher, as a father, started with the thou shalt nots before Jesus came and really brought the law to its perfection in talking about what our love is for, what our whole life is for. Same ways with parents. It's going to be easier and more fruitful raising kids to say, don't stick a key in the electric socket. Don't run out from cars. It starts with the thou shalt nots. But eventually, it's got to get to the point in which we're training our kids to choose to do the right thing, even when we're not telling them to do the right thing. We're trying to form their internal compass to point itself toward the good and the true. What is that internal compass? It's the conscience, God's interior voice, that we're trying to help them to see what's the right thing to do in these circumstances, what's not. And the only way they're really going to learn it is not only by good example from parents, but eventually explaining the why behind the what of our actions. The more parents do that to kids and say, listen, the reason why you can't go to that party on Friday night is actually that house has been known for some situations where it's been raided by police officers and everything else like this, for rowdiness and everything else. And
you sound like you're speaking from experience there, Father.
Yeah, it's easy. I'm happy to have you go to other parties, but I don't want you going to that particular party. And the more children learn the why behind the what, so that they can choose it interiorly rather than just suffer it from a law outside of themselves, they'll be trained to do that in many other areas of their life. And that's the education and freedom.
And that begins when? Because I know that the church's documents and teachings for, you know, teaching and educating children, primary responsibility are the parents. What age do we expect this to happen? I know that we've got the age 6 as the age of reason, but let's be practical.
So I think parents are showing an example from the earliest days when a child can pay attention. If the parents are acting virtuously, the kids are being educated in that school. They start to imitate, you know, kids talk the way their parents do.
And what about if kids don't have virtuous parents? How are they going to learn freedom? I mean, there are ways for them to learn anything. They could Google how to, you know, do heart surgery if they want to, but how do they learn it?
Good. The first is God does speak within. In this inner organ of sensitivity we call conscience. So even in a circumstance where kids haven't been blessed by the most stable situation, God's still present in those children's lives. And there are other good influences, but they've been made to want the good. And so it's not all dependent on nurture. Parents, even the worst of parents, will have some virtues. You know, Thomas Aquinas used to joke that even thieves know it's wrong to steal from them.
That's right. Right?
So like there's some virtues there. And sometimes as you and I see in marriage preparation, when they see their parents doing something that they know is wrong, let's just take something easy, constantly using foul language. They say, I'm going to do the opposite of that. And that's a little bit of an introduction into virtue. It's not the whole thing, but sometimes they emulate their parents. Sometimes they want to do the opposite. And so even in those circumstances in which a parent has a bad habit or a few, it's not necessarily a disastrous circumstance for a child, provided that the child is able not to become addicted to everything else and start to tune into God in some way, because God's going to be trying to speak in that child's life, just like he tried to speak in the young Samuel's life when he was in the temple in the Old Testament.
Yeah. Now you mentioned it, and I'm grateful that you did, that parents have to do some explaining as to why. Give the revelation and give the logic as to why you're doing this. But for parents, they can be a little authoritarian. What are going to be some tips to help parents to exercise freedom in a healthier way? Like what would be some things that they could be a little bit more permissive in?
So I want to start at something a little bit beneath that and get to it. First, yes. Parents cannot be eaten alive by fear. Like there are a lot of scary things out there for parents, no question about it. There are a lot of scary things for pastors, we care, but God is in our children's lives. And God is always active, and so we have to trust in him. Second, there's a difference between protecting kids and overprotecting kids. Overprotecting kids can suffocate their moral growth. Protective parents want to prevent their children from getting hurt for obvious reasons, but they recognize with some smaller hurts that those can be greater learning experiences than straitjackets morally. So for example, if a child wants the training wheels off the bike earlier than the parent thinks is wise, if the parent takes off those training wheels, the kids may end up getting some bruises and some scrapes. Kids probably not going to die as a result of not having training wheels, but the child may learn how to trust the parent if the parent said, I'm not sure you're ready, you sure you're ready, etc., and starts to fall, and maybe the parent catches, etc. There's a way to move forward on helping the children to trust the parents by their parents trusting the children enough, giving them formation, giving them a little space, not too much, but enough space so that they're able to grow. And that, you know, one of the problems that I see sometimes as a pastor, Leo, is Father Leo, is
you're free to call me Leo.
is sometimes parents and religious superiors and things like this can focus too much on obedience and not enough on love.
I wanted to get there. That's exactly what I wanted to do. Obedience, because I've got just basically two more blocks of questions. What is the relationship then from obedience and freedom in a practical way? Because say, for example, a person, let's just use me as an example. I felt called to enter into a community of consecrated life. And there could be questions, you know, well, does Leo just want to be disobedient to the bishop? What is going to be that relationship? And how does one come to a peacefulness? Because freedom is not easy to exercise. And there's always going to be repercussions with freedom. You're going to get hurt sometimes doing free things.
So there are a few considerations. Obedience, most authentically understood, is to make us truly free. But what does it mean, most authentically understood? Obedience as this desire within to do whatever God asks, knowing that what God wants is what's ultimately good for us. So there's a total trust and there's a total love there. That will make us more and more free like God when we do it. The problem is some of the times that's mediated by other structures. Parents, coaches, teachers, pastors, etc. And sometimes there's not that double listening going on to God, where those in a position of authority who should be listening to God before they say to us, do this, because I'm pretty convinced that this is what God is asking of you in this circumstance. We trust God and we trust them. Sometimes that double listening isn't happening. And that's where real conflict can occur. But in its best sense, obedience and freedom are not in contrast as the world looks at it. But real obedience is to make us truly free. At the same time, what I would say about God, and this is what a lot of us don't appreciate enough about God, God made us truly free. Free so that we would be able to choose to receive his love, remain in it, and respond to it. But that freedom came with a cost. And, you know, sometimes when we look at God's will and our desire to do God's will, we can look at it as a loaded revolver to our temple, that we've got no real choice in the matter. Let's take a couple examples. The son in the parable of the prodigal son. The father, who represents God the Father, knew that the real way to get his son back was to allow his son to wander away from the home, because the son had been in his house his entire time and didn't appreciate the father's love. And so he needed to learn that love, that lesson, in a way that most would never have appreciated. Likewise, when that rich young man came up to Jesus, said, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus says, "Keep the commandments." And he says, "I've been keeping them all." But he knew he was missing something. He lacked something. He actually had too much stuff. And so Jesus said, if you really wish to have it all, if you wish to be perfect, go sell all you have, give the money generously to the poor, and then come follow me, and you'll have treasure in heaven. And this rich young man went away sad at first. He wasn't following what the Lord was asking. But it doesn't say that this rich young man went to hell. He had been perfectly keeping the commandments. And there's a great tradition starting in the second century that this rich young man actually turned out to be Saint Mark. I'm not going to give the whole exegesis of that, but that he eventually came back, just like the prodigal son came back, learned from the misuse of his freedom what his freedom is really for, and then came back with a double focus on that, on the use of his freedom toward love, toward the truth, toward the good, and toward responsibility.
So those exegetical commentaries will come in part 3, 4, 5, 6, and through 12. But I want to ask a very difficult pastoral question. How about being able to be free to love whoever I want, even if it's a person of the same gender? Because we have parents who are struggling so much with how to love their child. And are they being too permissive if they still love that child and treat that child like they're going to welcome them, even though they're living in an alternative lifestyle? These are the conflicts that I think a lot of my audience members are struggling with.
So I'd make 2 points there. The first, they're absolutely free to love and they're called to love everyone. So there's no problem ipso facto that two people of the same sex love each other. But we have to go back to the distinction in Greek between the four types of love. Storge, which is love for those things that are very close to us, near and dear. Eros, which is romantic love. Philia, with a PH, which is love of friendship, and agape, which is Christian love, loving others as Christ has loved us. People of the same sex absolutely are called to love each other with agape, which means willing what their real good is, not just in this world, but forever. Likewise, they're absolutely able to live with philia, real love of friendship. And this is what the basis of any real romance should be, whether we're talking about opposite sex or same sex. It's got to be friends. They've got to be friends. If it starts with sex, it's always going to be corrupted. But then we've got to ask the deeper question, what is the relationship between truly loving somebody with agape and philia and engaging in sexual relations? With heterosexual couples, it's against the truth and against the good. It's against real love for the other person. It's against responsibility. If people are engaging in sexual activity, becoming one flesh with somebody before God has joined them in one flesh. Likewise, with those of the same sex, there's got to be, sexual relations has always got to be, as the languages call it, making love rather than corrosive of love. And, you know, to get straight to the heart of it, in my 30 years of studying this particular topic of the church's teachings on same-sex relations and interviewing hundreds of gays and lesbians as part of this, for the most part, same-sex sexual activity, they say, they tell me with great candor, is mutual utilitarianism. It's consensually engaging in activity using the other's body, harmonious hedonism, John Paul II would call it, rather than something that is trying to help the person approach God. You know, we've always got to focus on that distinction between being in love with someone and making love. And making love has got to be consistent and nourish that love. And the church's understanding of this, which has been verified by psychology, not to mention separation rates, etc., is that the more a relationship is sexual when it's not bound in a loving heterosexual marriage, the greater the dissolution rates, rather than a greater bond between two people, it begins to corrode the love that's always there. And so can two people of the same sex love each other? Absolutely, with philia and agape. If they have these romantic feelings, they didn't cause them. The feelings themselves aren't immoral. At the same time, like when you and I are attracted to someone, we have already made a choice and we've got to be true to that choice and responsible. So we've got to do something with those feelings that is not sinful. In the same way, whether somebody's heterosexual or homosexual, if you're not capable of engaging in moral sexual activity with somebody, you can't give in to those feelings. And that's why we've all got to pray and we've got to work and we've got to love in that way that we were talking about before, both where the people are, but love them in the truth so that we're able to help them be free from a life that might reduce rather than expand their freedom.
I've got one last question here because there's so much here to this, and it just shows how freedom is really one piece of a humongous picture, and you can't have just freedom without the rest of these things. If not, it will not be freedom. It truly will be slavery. And we've got to make sure we understand the parts to make it that whole. But last question before I return, and first of all, thank you for joining me on this Shoot the Shiitake and for this kind of little lesson on freedom. There's a lot more to learn. I want to ask you a basic question, and don't laugh at it, but how can I help you to be you? Like, how can I, as a priest and your friend, help you in any way? What can I do to help?
So at a general level, we pray for each other all the time.
For sure.
We always need it. Second, real friendship is what can help us to become free. Mm. Because a lot of the times people act out of a deficit of loneliness, out of somebody, for example, who doesn't have the capacity to say, listen, I don't think that's the way you want to go. Mm. I care about you too much that, you know, that's a bad call. Or on the flip side, to give you real encouragement when we're doing something challenging and saying, hey, Raj, that took a lot of guts and it's helped a lot of people, and keep at it because we really need that trumpet sounding clearly for all of us to charge. So real friendship is a second aspect of where the help is. And then third, with all your listeners, you can send people to my CatholicPreaching.com site to get some feedback of ways that I, in the teaching and the preaching, can better serve people in the ministries that I have to try to bring the light of the gospel to the areas in which the light needs to shine more brightly.
We will put those links on our website. I want to thank Father Roger Landry, my special guest, for two particular Shoot the Shiitakes. And when I return, I'm going to give you my carryout order. What did I learn from this conversation from not only a good friend, but a man who seems to be able to combine a lot of different forms of logic into something rather bite-sizable and compact. I will be back in just a moment. And welcome back to my carryout order here on Shoot the Shiitake. A special thanks to Father Roger Landry, good friend, for joining me and talking about making freedom more practical. And one of my biggest takeaways is that freedom is a great virtue that can either be used for the good or obviously used for the bad. But in order to understand this virtue of freedom, we have to have it in connection to all of the other virtues, like faith, like hope, like love, like temperance, like patience, like all of these gifts that come from God, and we don't use it because we just want to focus on freedom.
Like, so for example, I'm free to do what I want to do with my body, but we haven't mastered the virtue of self-control. And so you can see how if you have this virtue and this gift of freedom without the other ones, you're going to have a cheap version of freedom. And that's exactly what we have in the public discussion today. You see, Father Landry, we didn't really get into it, but that doesn't mean we can't have more shows. All you got to do is let us know if you enjoyed this show and if you want more kind of this content, because I know he'd be happy to talk about it, and I certainly would be willing to listen. Will you? You have the freedom to choose. But oftentimes we have not mastered the virtue of hard work and have fallen into the vice of laziness. And that's really the big problem. People don't want to do the hard work in order to be free. It's like, I just want to win the lottery, but I don't want to do the work to buy the ticket. Or even worse, I want to be rich and famous, but you don't do the work to be successful in whatever industry that can make that money for you. And if money is the only thing that you think will make you free, then we have become a slave to capitalism, which sometimes has its good qualities and its negative qualities. But people who aren't free thinkers, they'll only see it in one way or the other. So freedom is a much bigger topic. And in this time of our life, when our freedoms are being challenged, I think it's necessary for us to get theological when it comes to freedom so that we can approach that true freedom in the other logics of our life, whether it be how we deal with our biology, our psychology, and our sociology. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support us, then please become a member of our academy just by going to platinggrace.com. Click on Academy. There you can become a member and join at various tier levels, which will not only support us in our efforts to bring about conversion one conversation at a time, it will also give you access to premium content and to a bunch of cool perks. So I want to thank you for listening. Thank my special guest, Father Roger Landry. I hope this carryout order gives you one more thing to think about and digest. And in the meantime, stay hungry.
Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Redbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.